Chapter 28. Judgment. Section A. The Operation of Judging. The second step in the process of understanding is the judgment. In simple apprehension, we look at being as indivisible. Concepts are essentially indivisible. But when our minds begin to compose, to put realities together, they are performing a different operation. The mind here puts together or relates realities, taking into account their real status. For example, the concept of house, indivisible, but I can analyze it by saying that it is a construction made by men so that they can live together in privacy and protect themselves against the inclemencies of the weather. There, I am no longer in simple apprehension, but have passed to the second operation of affirming or denying, composing or dividing, judgment. In this act of composition, the mind grasps the unity of many elements in a single act of understanding, a complex act, but still one act. The simplicity is in the act, not in the content. Judgment is then that operation in the process of understanding wherein the mind grasps the composition of being, as well as the order of beings to one another or how they are related to one another. Section B. Judgment and Truth. The judgment may be either true or false, depending on whether it agrees with reality or not. The simple apprehension, on the other hand, is either true or it's not a simple apprehension. In the judgment, there is a possibility of error or falsehood because it states a relationship to reality. The mind has actually composed or divided, it has committed itself. While in simple apprehension, the mind either does or does not grasp the reality. Truth, i.e., the agreement of the mind with reality, should not be confused with certainty. It is possible to make a true statement without much certainty, or to make a false judgment with firm certainty. Truth has an objective basis, while certainty is a subjective state. Section C. Certainty and Belief. Certainty is the firmness of the assent of the mind. What are the causes of certainty? There are two. 1. The evidence of things directly in front of us. 2. The authority of a witness who deserves our trust. A very big percentage of our certainties is based on authorities. All the things of the past, for instance, are known in this way. We have to rely on the information others pass on to us. Evidence may be either 1. Direct, or 2. Demonstrable, subject to proof. And it gives rise to rational certainty, physical, or based on empirical data, or metaphysical, or based on the very essence of the thing. On the other hand, the authority of a witness gives rise to human faith, or belief, or moral certainty. Short of these two sources of certainty, a mere probability can only give rise to opinion, not certainty. The act of human faith, whereby, for instance, I believe that I was born in a particular place because I have been told by reliable witnesses, is a free and reasonable judgment about a truth which is not evident. It is free because there is no logical compulsion to accept it. But it is also reasonable because it is based on good grounds. Now, which is stronger, the certainty based on evidence or the certainty based on authority of witness? What is more certain, 2 plus 2 equals 4, or that I was born in such a place according to my parents? It is clear that the certainty of evidence has more weight since human authorities are not infallible. They may deceive or be deceived. However, if instead of human faith, it is divine faith, i.e., if I believe what God says, in this case the authority of God yields the highest certainty because he can neither deceive nor be deceived, as the First Vatican Council says. The act of divine faith, however, is also free and reasonable. Section D. Discursive Process of Reasoning. In Chapter 26, we said that through reason we can go from what we know already to a new knowledge, a new judgment. This is called the discourse of reason, or discursive reasoning, from Latin discursus, running along a course, a path one goes through. This manner of knowing is proper to man. The angels, on the other hand, have a purely intuitive intelligence, without any need for discourse, unhampered by any material conditions. On account of the substantial unity of man, the human intelligence is united to the body, so that, as we have seen, it has to go from the sensible to the intelligible in union with the body, and it normally knows step by step, i.e., by reasoning. The intelligence is the power to know the being of what things are, from Latin intus legere, equals to read into, to know what they are in themselves. But it can operate in two ways. One, intuitively, by reaching the truth directly without any process, intellectus. Two, reasoning, by reaching the truth through the discursive process, ratio. Man is defined as a rational animal because he uses ratio, ordinarily, rather than intellectus. However, he does use the intellect in some specific cases, like those of immediate or direct evidence, induction. And it is also the intellect that forms the concept of being and the principle of non-contradiction in this fashion. But it is a fact that the bulk of human knowledge is acquired through reasoning. For reasoning to generate knowledge in a person, however, this person has to go through the process himself. The possession of conclusions without seeing the inference from premises does not constitute knowledge, but a mere accumulation of data. It is useful to accumulate data, but as long as one tries gradually to better understand them. For instance, it is very good for children to memorize the catechism formulas, so as to avoid misunderstandings. But, as they grow older, they have to strive to understand them better, by further and deeper study of the truths of the faith. See Chapter 1, Section A. People must be taught how to reason, beginning with everyday experience, just as Jesus Christ taught the doctrine of salvation, beginning with parables and comparisons from everyday life, and thereby raising people's minds to higher realities. Thus, since man is not an angel, he needs formation. By reasoning, we can go from one truth to another, if our judgments are correct, and the linking of these judgments is correct. Likewise, there can be chains of errors in reasoning. If we start from a judgment which is false, all judgments following it will also be false, even if the reasoning is correct. The process of reasoning has to be geared to the direct intellectual grasp of reality, which is the ultimate criterion of truth. Section E, Self-Knowledge, Consciousness, and Reflection. What is consciousness? The term comes from the Latin conscientia, cum scientia, what goes with knowledge. We say that we are conscious when our external senses, our wits, are in contact with reality, and the coordinating sense is in operation, gathering perceptions through it the amalgamation of sensations. Sleep is precisely the interruption of this operation of the coordinating sense. The other internal senses then continue to operate, but having lost contact with reality, they fly into the unreality of dreams. In the conscious state, we know, and we know that we know. We advert to our knowledge, while in the unconscious state, whether asleep, dreaming, or awake, daydreaming, or absent-minded, we do not advert to it. We are not aware of our acts. Consciousness is not a potency, but an act, and in the case of man, an act of intelligence, namely, a judgment in which the subject is I, and the predicate is the act or property of the I. Example, I know. I stands for the person, who is the subject of bearer of the human nature or essence, and of the act of being a man. When a man is awake and in contact with reality, all his acts are knowing and willing, and his tendencies are accompanied by consciousness. and there is a specific type of consciousness about the good or evil of human acts, which is called moral consciousness, or conscience. See Part 6, Ethics. In man, there is also self-consciousness, which means that he has the power of perfect reflection, as we saw when dealing with the spirituality of the intelligence, Chapter 26. This reflection in man can be either concomitant with the act of knowledge, i.e., running alongside the act of knowing, so to speak, I know that I know, or explicit, i.e., looking upon the self as knowing, I know myself as knowing. The latter is called in actu signato, and the former in actu exercito. This power of reflection and self-consciousness explains the interior life, or inwardness, or inner life of man. Animals do not have interior life, because they cannot perform the perfect reflection since they are bound to matter. They can only accumulate sense experience, but without any self-consciousness. This self-knowledge, which is a perfection proper to spiritual creatures, is not, however, the greatest perfection of that creature, because the self of the creature is neither the highest truth nor the supreme goodness. The perfection of a creature lies in achieving its end, which is, in the case of the spiritual creature, to know and love God. But in order to know and love God, the spiritual creature must be conscious not only of the you, but also of the I. Section F. Conclusion. Knowledge as enrichment of being. Knowledge is a climbing up in the order of actuality, in the sense that, by means of knowledge, man acquires in an intentional way, not physically, see chapter 14, section B and C, and chapter 27, C and D, the participated being of other things. From there he can climb to the being by essence, which is God, as distinct from participated being. Always, however, in an incomplete way, since a creature cannot attain a perfect knowledge of God, although he can always improve it. Knowledge is then a progressive enrichment in being on the part of the knower, who becomes more and more as he knows more and more, and can thus move towards the pure actuality of God. Now, just as the human intelligence can ascend towards the fullness of actuality, it can also descend towards potentiality. We can know what is potential, and ultimately the root of potentiality, which is prime matter, see chapter 7, section C, but always starting from act, from actuality. Because in order to know, we have to start from the to be, or actuality of things. What we know directly and primarily is the actuality of sensible things, see chapter 26, section B. And from there we can go, 1, up towards God as the fullness of actuality, or 2, down towards potentiality. This is the range of human knowledge.